And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
All right, let's get after it. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, brought to you by our good friends at Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Another mailbag slash potpourri edition of the pod. Nick Alberga with you. No Pete Jensen once again. He continues to battle a nasty flu bug. Get better soon, Pete. But undoubtedly, those are big shoes to fill. So we summoned one of the very best to help us out today. It's none other, the one and only Jake Hahn from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. Jake, what's going on, buddy?
Always difficult to fill the shoes of Pete Jensen, and I echo what you said. I hope he feels better very soon, but I'm happy to be here with you, Nick. We can break it down. There's a lot going on. International hockey, we've got NHL hockey, obviously, as well, and we're into the 2023 calendar, so I'm looking forward to breaking it down with you here.
I was going to say, we're two Canadians alone on a podcast. Should we just gloat for the next half hour about that World Junior victory Yes. against the States? Should we just do that?
Well, I did wear my Canada sweater for a reason, maybe to rub a little salt into the wound. And I know goaltender interference is the hot topic after that game. And I don't know if you want to get into it at all with the calls, but I mean, goaltender interference is what it is. And Canada still scored, what, five goals and then a sixth into an empty net. So I wouldn't read too much into it. Those calls are finicky, especially, and I saw some of your tweets the night of the game, Nick, especially in the IIHF. You just never know what you're going to get when you get involved with those referees and those officials. So I just kind of put my hands up and say, hey, whatever call they're going to make, you just kind of move on and you continue to play the game.
Yeah, it's pretty much a night out on the town for yours truly. You never know what's going to transpire sometimes, and Canada wins. But man, there's a lot to get to here in the fantasy world. It seems like everything's happened in the last 48 to 72 hours. Speaking of States, we'll start with Jack Eichel. It sounds like he's close to returning here for the Vegas Golden Knights. Could actually happen tonight as we have this conversation on Thursday night after missing 11 games. What does this do for Vegas, in your opinion?
Yeah, I got a question for you here as well. But I think what it does, it just obviously makes them a deeper team. I've been actually so impressed by what Vegas has done all season. When we look at teams that have excuses, Nick, for injuries, like I know Colorado's getting a lot of play because of the injuries they've had this year and the disappointing season that they've had by their standards, winning the cup last year. You know, now they're kind of just in that middle pack fighting for a playoff spot. But I look at Vegas's injuries and they have every excuse in the book to be having a terrible season, right? With Shea Theodore out on the back end and Alex Pietrangelo missed some time on the back end. Many forwards have been out of the lineup as well. Goaltending issues even to start the year. So Eichel comes back. Obviously, he's going to go top line. He's going to go top power play. I ask you, what do we do with Michael Amadio now, who has just been the flavor of the last couple of weeks? Like, I don't know if he's going to stick on that top line. I guess he won't with Eichel back. He's been playing with Stevenson and Stone up on that top line. So I suppose he moves down, but has he not earned at least a spot in that top six, maybe somewhere on the second line?
I love these success stories, Jake. A 7-game point streak, 5 goals, 9 points. As far as I know, stemming from the lines from practice, they're going to stick with him with Stevenson and Stone, and that's probably the play. So it looks like it's going to be Riley Smith and Nicolas Roy with Jack Eichel. But I can't help but laugh because Vegas always makes these moves and you think things are going to happen. Like last year, they pick up Eichel. They're like, okay, you're going Pacioretty and Stone, or even previous to that, they're going Pacioretty and Stone. And they never do that. And all they do is complain about not having a number one center. So I gave up. I think the key here for Vegas is to spread the wealth. But without question, they have to be a front runner for the cup this year. I think it's been really surprising in my world. In fact, I picked Vegas to miss the Stanley Cup playoffs. But Bruce Cassidy's done an exceptional job, hasn't he?
Well, who is the best team in the Western Conference to you right now? Like if you were to power rank them, and we actually did power rankings on our show recently, I did have Vegas as the top team in the West. Now it took me many Eastern Conference teams to even get to a Western Conference team. I think the top teams in the East are just so much stronger than the West this year. But I don't know, like I'm not 100% sold on Dallas as the top team in the West. I know they're having a nice season. Winnipeg, I'm just not there either. So it probably is Vegas for me. I think when fully healthy, Colorado could still probably be that team. But I don't know about you, Nick. I do feel like Vegas is proving they're probably the team to beat in the Western Conference, at least at the moment.
Yeah, and I guess it speaks for itself in that conversation. I do still think the teams in Alberta will elevate at some point in time. There's a lot of racetrack remaining in this regular season. Don't forget that as we lead up to the Stanley Cup playoffs and the trade deadline in a couple months. But I think certainly as we have this conversation, it has to be Vegas. They've done a tremendous job. My future on Logan Thompson to win the Calder is looking pretty damn good right now. Petrangelo's nice. Looked really good the last couple games since coming back from that crazy family story, and happy everything's okay on that front. But yeah, they seem to have the depth. I think in the long run, I think they still have to add a score. You know what they would love to have? Max Pacioretty.
Well, and speaking of Max Pacioretty, what do we do with Patches? He looks like he's nearing a return here. And I'm really curious what they do in Carolina with that power play unit when Pacioretty comes back, just to kind of shift gears, because I don't know what he did to get in Rod Brindamore's good books, but he loves Stefan Nason. Like, this guy has been locked on the first power play all season long. I don't know who gets bumped. I'm assuming it's Nason. I'm assuming Pacioretty gets that spot on the power play. Maybe you bump Svechnikov. We've seen Brindamore do that in the past. I certainly think that that's a bit of a long shot. So I feel like anybody that's riding the Stefan Nason power play run that he's been on this year, that could come to an end pretty soon.
Yeah, he's very reminiscent and similar to like Michael Amadio, what he brings to Vegas. Nason brings that to the Carolina Hurricanes. So for starters, it sounds, and as you mentioned, he could make his debut on Thursday coming back from the Achilles injury. Don't forget, this could be the team debut. They picked him up from Vegas for, wait for it, future considerations. What a pickup for Carolina. You know what? Like, I was having an issue trying to figure out where Pacioretty first and foremost slots in. Even strength. You look at the depth, Jake. Svechnikov, Stastny, Natchez, Teravainen and Aho, Jarvis, Martinuk, Stahl, Faust on your third line. So Pacioretty was skating with Kotkaniemi and Stepan at practice on Wednesday, but that's Nason's position. So that's why it leads me to believe, I don't know if he's going to make his debut against Nashville, but still, I want to turn the tables on you and ask you, is this the deepest team, at least forward-wise, in the NHL right now in the Carolina Hurricanes?
I think at the wing position, it probably is. Like, when you read off a lot of those names, they are so deep at left wing, right wing, that, and I think that that makes it really difficult to put Pacioretty back into the lineup, where I think they could maybe use a little bit of help. And if they are looking towards the deadline, and they feel like they would be a team that would certainly be trying to add at the deadline, they're a very legit cup contender. I consider them one of the top three teams in the NHL right now, is still down the middle of the ice. I do still worry about that center ice position when you go head to head with some of the top dogs in the Eastern Conference. And there are some legit top dogs in the Eastern Conference this year that have depth down the middle of the ice. So I think in terms of the Canes being a contender, that's where my one concern would lie. But they're as deep as anybody at that wing position, and players that can score and put the puck in the back of the net. Like, how bad was Marty Natchez last year, man? And now this year, he is just incredible. He's been the shot prop king basically all season, and he's been driving so much offense for them. And some of those other names, we haven't really seen the best of Turbo yet this year. Teravainen, and I think he's starting to get into it. Now you add Pacioretty into that mix. So if they can figure out that center ice position, I would call them probably the deepest team in the league right now.
Yeah, if I wanted to be selfish, if I'm Carolina, it's either Horvat or Ryan O'Reilly, maybe even both. Why not? Just go for it this time. Like, they're so primed and ready to win a cup right now. But as for Pacioretty, a poll question was up on NHL Fantasy Instagram. Follow along on Wednesday. Will Pacioretty be a top 100 fantasy player for rest of season purposes? I say without a shadow of a doubt, I think this guy's must-add right now, Jake.
Yeah, well, and we know what Pacioretty does, right? He likes to shoot the puck a lot. And the one thing I'm kind of wondering is, like, where do the shots go? Because we know Natchez likes to shoot the puck a lot. We know Svechnikov likes to shoot the puck a lot. Obviously, Pacioretty likes to shoot the puck a lot. The good thing is Carolina has no problem throwing like 40, 45 shots at a goaltender. And the thing I love about Carolina is, even when they're winning a game, if they're up two or three goals in the third period, they continue to generate. They continue to provide offense. They don't really just sit back and let the other team take chances and go into that defensive shell. So I think there's shots for everybody. I'm probably with you that I think he's got potential to be a top 100 fantasy player the rest of the way. And he's going to get that power play time. I'm assuming he bumps Nason off that first power play unit. So yeah, if you've been sitting on Pacioretty, that's a real nice midseason add in your fantasy lineup.
This guy's a hired gun. Simply put, I think there's going to be a bit of a transition period as well. Goes from Vegas to Carolina, different type of system, but the body of work speaks for itself. Like, Pacioretty's been a top 60 fantasy file for like the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And I was uber curious to see him skating with Kotkaniemi. Of course, he knows him from his days with the Montreal Canadiens. So we're really American heavy and themed on this show on purpose. Not really. But Patrick Kane, so he gets banged up for the Chicago Blackhawks. Man, as a Patrick Kane owner, it's been a turbulent season, to say the least. But at this point, for fantasy owners, you have to stay the course until he's inevitably dealt, right?
Yeah, you'd like some good injury news as well. But I do think that like that trade has to happen, right? It's just been such a strange situation how it's been handled by every side. It doesn't feel like Kane wants to go. Like, it's not like you're hearing quotes, and maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe he does really want to get out of there and he's just kind of playing nice guy and not really saying it out loud or to the media, but you're not seeing these quotes like, you know, get me out of here, get me to a contender. It feels like he's pretty happy just playing out the string in Chicago and seeing where this thing goes. So it's just been a really strange situation for a guy with an expiring contract like that. Now he picks up this injury, so you hope it's nothing long-term, you know, nothing that's going to affect that sort of trade value. Do you have a team or teams?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you do. I know you love a good trade and you're probably just itching for this Patrick Kane trade. But do you have a team or a list of teams maybe that you feel like would be a good fit for Patrick Kane that should be in on these quote unquote sweepstakes?
I'm sitting on my couch just tweeting somebody make a trade. We're at that level because there's no creativity in this league and we'll get to that. But to me, from day one, it has to be the New York Rangers, like the Panarin comparable and you know, playing with Panarin in his career. I just think they need a boost out of most teams who think they're perennial contenders. It's the New York Rangers. Now, granted, I think the Islanders are in that conversation. My sneaky team could be the New Jersey Devils. And why not throw the Carolina Hurricanes into the conversation? On top of that, I think Dallas is another team to watch. As far as I know, they made a call in the offseason. I think everybody's going to be interested in Patrick Kane, not to cop out on your question, but those four teams are probably on my list. How about you?
I really like what you said. I really like Dallas, actually, out of the teams that you mentioned there, because they've had a nice season. I think there's a lot of things that you could really like about Dallas, especially for the future, too. It feels like they have all these prospects that are coming up the system, too. I think Dallas is in a really good spot for the next 5 to 10 years. But talking about just this year and them going for it and being a cup contender, I think Dallas feels like that perfect fit. A couple of those teams that we talk about that are contenders, it feels like the position they need to add is the center ice position, right? We already talked about Carolina and how they maybe need some help down the middle of the ice. I would say the same thing about a Colorado as well, who has been maybe linked to Patrick Kane in those rumors. I know it would be pretty difficult for Colorado to get that done. But for me, the Avs need a second line center. So if they're going to spend capital, if they're going to make some sort of trade before the deadline, I think they're probably looking more of a replacement for Nazem Kadri leaving in the offseason and going for that second line center position. So I think Dallas makes a lot of sense. And that's a team I'm going to have my eye on to see if they make a big move.
Well, of course, that's the irony for Colorado. They're looking to replace Nazem Kadri after losing him in the offseason, but that's a well-oiled machine. They get Nathan MacKinnon back. And for some reason, I just think Dallas could make a lot of sense. Let's get over to the fat mailbag, my dude. Drop Demko is one of the questions via Instagram. Of course, he hasn't, you know, we haven't heard from him in a while here.
No, drop is difficult. Like I feel like obviously it depends on how many IR spots you have, right? If you're getting to that point where you have so many injuries and you're running out of IR spots, I guess you do have to make those difficult decisions. It also, to me, depends on where you are in your standings. If you're having a good fantasy season, you're up near the top, you can afford to hang on to Thatcher Demko because of the boost he could give you late in the season if he comes back healthy and can play for you in fantasy playoffs. So yeah, for me, it really factors into where you are. If you're fighting for a playoff spot, if you're not having a great fantasy season, and maybe you got to cut ties because you just need those roster spots.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. This one's a good one as well. Thoughts on Caulfield's slump over the past 7 to 14 days, man. Is it me or the World Junior turned on? The Montreal Canadiens saw Connor Bedard. They saw the fact that they might have 2 lottery picks and they're like, nah, I don't think so this season.
Someone needs to show the Philadelphia Flyers Connor Bedard highlights because they're playing too well right now. I don't know what Torts is doing over there in Philly, but yeah, Montreal, they've gotten the message. And the great thing is too, they now look like they might have 2 kicks at the can for Connor Bedard with what the Panthers are doing. Now, I still think that the Panthers won't be in the lottery conversation. I feel like they're going to have a better second half, not good enough to make the playoffs, but I think good enough to get themselves out of that lottery conversation and not help out Montreal with that pick. But yeah, the Habs have been watching Connor Bedard certainly and are starting to get the message that they need to lose some games.
Oh, it's scary how bad the Montreal Canadiens have been the last 2 weeks. And it seems to go right in line with the start of the pre-tournament games for Team Canada at the World Junior. We will get to Connor Bedard, don't worry, in terms of fantasy ranking for next season. But Cole Caulfield, you know, a quick word. I think you just hold firm. This guy's still on pace, as we predicted in the preseason, for 40 goals. He's pretty much the only guy who produces alongside Nick Suzuki at this point in Montreal, right?
Yeah, I don't really see the issue with Cole Caulfield right now. Yeah. I think he's doing what he can in that offense. It's just not an offense that's going to score a ton, but it feels like when I'm watching Habs games or I'm tracking Habs games on a busy night, it's like, okay, it's 4-0 for whatever team the Habs are playing. And then 4-1, Caulfield scoring. Okay, like he's like the only guy that's going for them right now. And I think he's someone you certainly want on your roster the rest of the way. He's going to get all the minutes he can handle. He's going to get all the power play time he can handle. And we do know he loves to shoot the puck as well. He's the guy that they're going to try to get to in space to shoot. And I do love his 3-on-3 overtime prowess as well. We haven't seen it as much this season, but if you do get the Habs into overtime, I think he's got a great chance to give you that GWG.
Jake, until they prove otherwise, I'm smashing the puck line against the Montreal Canadiens. That continues you against should. The New York Rangers on Thursday night.
Yeah, you should be hammering the puck line against Montreal, because if they're going to lose, they're going to lose by multiple goals. It's just... Yeah, the defense and the goaltending is so bad for the Habs. There's no way to tiptoe around it. And like, I think this is what they want. They set up their roster to struggle this year. And I know they made some moves in the offseason, but their moves were to bring in younger guys like Kirby Dach. And they took a shot on Sean Monahan, who actually looked pretty good until he unfortunately got hurt. So they took some shots in the offseason, but none of it was to go in to try to win this year. And that blue line is just so young. It's so inexperienced. And I think as we get later in the season and Montreal starts to play teams or continues to play teams that are in a playoff race and playoff caliber teams, yeah, you should be hammering the puck line against them, because I think there's going to be some tough nights to come.
Okay, can we get into this Jacob Vrana situation? So yes. Earlier this week, he was put on waivers by Detroit. It turns out to be sorcery by Stevie Y. By all accounts, this guy's been dreadful in his rehab, I guess, in the AHL. Of course, he's working his way back from the NHL's player assistance program in mid-October, but a -4 through 4 games, no points. What do fantasy owners do right now? That is a big-time question with Jacob Vrana. Do you just dump out at this point?
Even the Grand Rapids Griffins are like, get this guy out of here. They're killing us. He's killing us in the AHL. He's a -4 and he's giving us nothing. And I actually stashed him when I saw the news that he was coming back from the player assistance program. I grabbed him, threw him on the IR. I said, okay, like, we know what Vrana can do. So maybe this could be a sneaky fantasy ad. And clearly it doesn't sound like he's ready to play at the NHL level. It doesn't even sound like he's ready to play at the American Hockey League level, to be honest, right now. So maybe he builds up. If you have a spot to stash him, maybe you play the waiting game for like one more week, 2 more weeks, and you see where this plays out. If you're at the top of your fantasy standings, I think you have the ability, a little leeway to do that. If you're fighting for a spot, if you're at the bottom, I don't think you really have the leeway to do it. I just don't see this having a full happy ending this season, Nick. I don't know about you. Maybe you feel differently on this. I don't feel like he's in a good spot. I don't feel like that's just going to do a full 180 and change over the next couple of weeks. Maybe we're looking closer to next season for a rejuvenation for Vrana.
The struggle for me is the 39 games total with Detroit, 22 goals and 32 points, right? You just prorate that and you're like, damn, that's pretty good. I can use that on my fantasy roster. But I can't help but raise these bushy eyebrows when a guy like Jacob Vrana goes on waivers and he goes unclaimed. Now, Boomer Gordon on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio made a good point. The teams going for Bedard don't want to get any better. Yeah. And the teams who are contenders just have no cap space, right? So ultimately, if you fall in the middle, you're probably not taking a flyer. But I don't know if we know this whole story. So yeah, I'm probably fading too.
Yeah, and a $5 million player is one thing. A $5 million player makes sense if you know it's sort of a sure thing. If you're bringing in the $5 million player, you know exactly what you're going to get. You know exactly where the player is in terms of his rehab and in terms of his skill level. Bringing in a $5 million player with the amount of question marks that Vrana, the baggage that he brings at this moment right now, I just think is so difficult for teams to do midseason. And yeah, maybe in a different year, you would see a team like Arizona just step up and say, hey, yeah, let's throw him on the roster. Let's see what he can do. We can take a skilled player that's still young-ish. But in the year that we're in right now with Connor Bedard, I don't think anybody at the bottom of the standings is looking to add to their roster right now.
And I think to that point, too, there's some other players in this draft. I know the conversation will be about Connor Bedard. I do think it is sort of tank proof, because I think we've seen time and time again, teams who are just dreadful and finish last don't ultimately get the prize. Right. And I think the Buffalo Sabres are the prime example of that a couple of years back, where they really wanted Connor McDavid and they didn't get Connor McDavid. So we talk about Detroit. What's happening with them? Like, they've been a big time fade for me in the betting world. And along those lines, you can tell all the listeners, I predicted this, a sophomore slump for Moritz Seider, man. Like, he's reaching drop territory, isn't he?
I can't believe we got here. And I got to give you credit, because this is like the Alberga trademark second year defenseman, sophomore slump. It's actually incredible. And I thought Mo Sider would be foolproof to this, that even though, okay, the standard Alberga second year slump for a young defenseman. Yeah. Just, I thought Mo Sider was better than that. You know, he was just going to be a little bit different. So it's not happening for him this year. It's so difficult to pull that drop on Mo Sider though, because you just feel like as soon as you drop him, he's going to go on that heater and he's going to revert back to that defenseman. So that's the difficult part. That's what being a fantasy manager is all about, is making those difficult decisions. You can't really trade him at this point. He's got no trade value. So your decision is either just to ride it out or go look to the waiver wire. But it is, and just to touch too quickly on Detroit as a team, I never really bought in this year, to be completely honest. Same. I know when they got off to that decent start, I'm like, okay, I'll tip my cap. They're winning some games here. They look like they're hanging in games. At least they're getting some decent goaltending, but I just don't think they have the high end skill to go up against the other teams in the Eastern Conference right now. I would honestly, I much prefer Buffalo and their high end skill, and even Ottawa. I could see Ottawa rhyming off some wins. I don't think enough to get into the playoff conversation, but I feel like the Sens could end up doing a drive-by on the Red Wings at some point this year as well.
I like it. And the worst thing about Detroit, it's not like Philip Hronek's doing anything now either, man. The guy's gone off a cliff. Like, that team in general, they can't make a save. They can't keep the puck out of the net. Like, it's a tire fire, not to mention the big-time questions ahead with Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi, who could be on the radar in fantasy hockey and the trade deadline the next couple months. As far as I know, I don't think they're re-signing Tyler Bertuzzi, so that's a hot name to watch. I'm happy you brought up the Buffalo Sabres because I have circled them for this conversation. So they've won 7 of the past 8. You love your futures looks. Tage Thompson, last I checked, plus 3,500 for the Hart Trophy. A, is that a good bet? B, do they need to make the playoffs for that to happen? And are you a believer in the Sabres team? Can they actually make the playoffs, Jake?
Yes, I do think they can make the playoffs. I feel like that's on the table. I think it's still a bit of a long shot, but I think that the one thing that the Sabres do well, and they do better or as good as any team in the league, it's score goals. And scoring goals is one of the most important things in the league. So they have something that I think a lot of those other middling teams don't have, and it's an elite offense. Now, keeping the puck out of the net is a bit of a different story, and the goaltending situation just terrifies me, even though I do love saying Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and he has been good for the most part this season. That does worry me a little bit. The 35-1 on Tage to win the Hart, it's a big number. So it's a number that you could sprinkle just a little, like a small unit wager on, just for a little bit of fun if he keeps this up. But Connor McDavid is just running away with the thing at this point. I know the Oilers have issues of their own and their playoff spot isn't guaranteed at the moment, but what does he have? Like 15 more points than anybody else in the league. His guy gets 2 points every single game. It's McDavid's award to win this year, unless he gets hurt. But there is always that instance, right? If something happens to McDavid and no one's wishing injury on anybody, yeah, that 35-1 on Tage Thompson all of a sudden looks really, really good.
It's funny. It's like the LeBron factor with McDavid. He needs to go above and beyond to be in consideration for the Hart Trophy to be the best player in the league. And I think he's doing that this year. Like, he's just on a different planet and pretty much dragging the Edmonton Oilers through this season. You mentioned UPL, by the way, last 5 games, 2.75, a 925. We've talked about him a lot on the podcast the last couple of weeks. Certainly keep him on your radar. Speaking of radar, the Winter Classic, I know you're a baseball guy. The optics at Fenway, just tremendous. So from my understanding, Jake DeBrusk finished this game maybe with a broken fibula. He scores twice in that game in the win for the Boston Bruins, but it comes at a loss. It looks like he's going to miss some time here for the Bees.
I had to do a double take when I saw this news come down. I can't remember who it was that first broke it online, but I saw the news and I had to do the old check for fake account because I'm like, how would he have a broken fibula? I just watched him score a couple goals in the Winter Classic. He looked perfectly fine late in that game. So I don't know what happened, and I'm not going to speculate on how it happened, but it's brutal news. It's really brutal news for Jake DeBrusk, who had a really resurgent, nice season, playing up on that top line, getting big minutes. He was locked onto that first power play unit for Boston as well. So if you're a DeBrusk owner, you just kind of have to eat that, right? I don't think you're going to get him back. And that's just a really tough loss at this point of the season. Feel bad for DeBrusk because he was having a nice year with a Boston team that's clearly contending to win a Stanley Cup. I love the Winter Classic, by the way, Nick. I don't know. I'm sure you've already given your take on it. Yeah. I know people like to complain about it. I feel like it's like Winter Classic happens. Everyone has to go on and complain about the venue or complain about the teams that are playing. I just think it's a nice change of pace. You watch as much hockey as anybody I know, and I'm sure breaking up the monotony of an 82-game schedule where you're just watching games in the same arenas every night, it's kind of nice to see it, especially at a venue like Fenway Park.
Yeah, just wait for the All-Star snub conversation. That's always fun this time of year, and that's coming very, very soon. I think you're so right, by the way, in the Winter Classic, but I got two words for you. Perfection line. I think the loss of DeBrusque diminishes the fantasy value of Krejci and Hall, because I think they have no chance, no choice, I should say, but to go back to the perfection line, which we saw and we have seen quite a bit the last little while, the best line in the NHL. So they're coming back together, right? I just think that stinks for Krejci and Hall.
I think that's the easy move to make just right away, because you know there's that comfortability, right? That you can throw that line together and you let the other guys figure it out. Maybe you give Taylor Hall that spot. You give him a look up there and you see what he can do, because he actually has been quite good. But the thing I like about Taylor Hall this year is he's kind of been driving his own line. At times he's been on the third line, and so long the last few years, it was their lack of depth. It's like, okay, perfection line's great, but you're not getting anything from lines 2 through 4. This year it had changed. They didn't need the perfection line. Everybody had kind of been contributing, and Taylor Hall had been driving play on his own line. So yeah, I think they probably go perfection line to start, but I would keep a sneaky eye on Taylor Hall. Maybe he actually gets a boost from this Jake DeBrusque news.
I like that. So internally, look at that. Externally, some replacement options. Connor Sherry, a 5-game point streak. Michael Bunting, 9 goals in the past 10. Two Kings guys, and Iafallo and Arvidsson and Alex Killorn. There are some wingers out there, but I think we're so deep into the fantasy season, it's so hard to find long-term value on the waiver wire, Jake.
It's difficult. It is difficult to find value on the waiver wire. It's difficult to find someone that's just sitting there that's going to totally change your roster, because it's probably been picked clean at this point. I feel like this is the time of year, and I know you love trades. You love NHL trades. You probably like fantasy trades as well, but I feel like this is the time of year where I think you got to make those types of decisions as a fantasy owner, because you're not going to change your team off the waiver wire. I feel like if you don't feel like your team is good enough to win your league, this is the time where you maybe make that move, or you send out those trade offers and see if you can pluck a player off of a roster. So I don't know if I would necessarily be looking to the waiver wire to change my team. I think I would, this is the time of year I'd be looking to make that trade.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And I think there's a lot out there in terms of short-term value. And there's a guy I'm going to get to right now. Who delivered the most in fantasy hockey this week? It's time now for the delivery of the week, brought to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Jake, you go first since you're the guest.
I'm going with Travis Konecny of the Philadelphia Flyers. Philly needs to learn how to lose some games, though, because they're winning way too much right now with the Connor Bedard sweepstakes. But the offense that he's putting up right now, goals in 5 of his last 6 games, multi-point games in 5 of 6 as well, 3 shorthanded points. If you do have the shorthanded points category, which I do in a couple of leagues, Travis Konecny is just killing it for you right now. All situations player, even strength, power play, he kills penalties. He's doing it all for Philly. And if anybody's had a resurgence or a boost based on John Tortorella taking over behind the bench in Philly, it's been Travis Konecny.
I'm taking a very similar player. I'm going to go with Michael Bunting of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I like to call him waiver wire pickup extraordinaire. And the garden seat with Austin Matthews and Willie Nylander, back-to-back 2-goal games, 9 goals in the past 10, on pace for a career-high 28 goals. And did I mention contract here, Michael Bunting? He's going to get paid by somebody in the offseason. Remember, for all your food delivery needs, use Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Also, hit us up with a reply. Who delivered the most for you in fantasy hockey this week? Speaking of delivering, Jake, we should wrap with the World Junior conversation. And Connor Bedard, he's pretty good at hockey, isn't he?
He is. And I'm glad you brought this up. This is what I was itching to ask you about at some point on this podcast. And it's Connor Bedard, and it's the way too early look at next year and the fantasy conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of blanks to fill in before that, because we don't know which team he's going to be playing for. We can speculate, and we kind of know the handful of teams that have a legit shot at landing Connor Bedard going into next year. But I feel like this is going to be, he has to be the most hyped rookie coming into fantasy hockey that I can remember. I don't know, maybe things change between now and fantasy drafts going into next season, but it's the conversation surrounding where to draft him in fantasy hockey is just going to be fascinating. But yes, I can confirm he is really good at hockey.
Hell, it's already started, Jake. That was my next question. Yeah. Like, where do you look at this guy? And it's a way too early draft ranking for next season. Like, I wonder if he could jump up into the top 50. I tell you this, you're a big shot prop guy. I can't wait to hammer that shot prop. What's the number going to be at 6.5 per game?
I don't know what it's going to start at, but it's funny you mention that, because I'm watching him take all these shots, and He looks like he loves to shoot. I'm trying to figure out what kind of player he's going to be. Like, is he going to be the shooter? Is he going to be the passer? I feel like he's probably going to be a bit of both. It looks like he's got both in him, but I'm wondering the same thing. I'm like, I can't wait to bet these Connor Bedard shot props. You can't find props, unfortunately, in the World Juniors. No. There are some offshore books that will let you bet on points and things like that, but you can't find the shot props. I'm thinking they probably started at like 3.5 and then it just skyrockets from there, maybe 4.5.
Yeah, the guy's an absolute freak. Like, I really, you know, there's been some comparables in this market here in Toronto. Like, he's a cross speed between Matthews and Marner. And I think that's a pretty good comp. But again, you always have to be careful with rooks. Like, Alexi Lafreniere is a perfect example. There's been plenty of players in recent memory where people have jumped the gun. It's one thing to have this guy dominate at the junior level. It's another thing to do it in the NHL. Like, this is the best league in the world, Jake.
I think he's going to get drafted extremely high because all it's going to take is one player in your league to go, I can't miss on Connor Bedard. Like, I need this guy on my roster. What if he goes off for like 100 points in his rookie season? And I just, that's why I feel like the hype train is just going to continue to grow. And again, it's going to depend on what team he lands on. Like, if he, let's just say he lands on Columbus. Let's say Columbus wins the lottery and all of a sudden Columbus reloads next year with Laine, Gaudreau, Bedard, a healthy Werenski on the back end. That team is going to get hyped to the moon. And I just feel like people in fantasy hockey are going to want Bedard if he's on the Jackets. And you can create this story for almost any team. You could put him on in a Montreal jersey, a Chicago jersey, whatever you want to do. Sharks, I think you can make a pretty fun lineup there as well. But it's amazing to think of the line combinations for next year. And yeah, I feel like he probably does crack the top 50 in most leagues. I just think someone in your league is really going to want him.
Wait, wasn't Columbus hyped this season? Don't answer that. I had a buddy who's a big Hawks fan message me and say, yeah, I'm pumped up about getting Bedard. I'm like, well, who's the guy going to play with? He's going to get like 40 points playing with nobody with all Philip Kurashev. No, it's got to be about the fit too. You're right. Speaking of phenoms, I wanted to ask you this to wrap. And I tweeted this out on Wednesday as well. So Cale Makar at +175. I looked at a couple books, by the way. Why is this guy still the runaway favorite for the Norris Trophy? Did I miss something in this season? Yeah. Like, has he done something to get this kind of treatment, Jake?
Well, I think it's what he did last year, and that's why he's getting this treatment, at least with the odds makers and the fact that he's still a significant favorite. You can sell me on him being the favorite still, or maybe a co-favorite, but the gap in the odds between him and the next player, I think, is just too large at this point. I feel like the value, if you're betting it, and it's going to vary book to book, I think the value's on Adam Fox. Like, is Adam Fox not having, to me, I feel like he's playing better this year than he did in his Norris Trophy year. I personally have money on Rasmus Dahlin at a pretty big number, so that's who I'm rooting for. Ultimately, I don't think Dahlin is going to get it done in terms of winning this award. I just think that there's too many other candidates. Maybe you want to go with a Morrissey, but I feel like Fox is the value right now, at least in the betting market. I think he's hovering around that 8-1, 9-1 range. I feel like that's where my money would go if I'm betting it right now.
So the top five numbers. So I mentioned Makar at +175. This is a rough estimate, by the way. Carlson at +410, which I think is pretty decent value considering his season. Dahlin at +430. You're right. Fox at +700. I won't lie. I sprinkled a bit on Josh Morrissey with the Winnipeg Jets at +1,000. He's having an incredible season too. I don't know if people are seeing this, but the Jets in general have been an exceptional story. And I think, like me, you were bullish on this team going into this season, no?
I've been bullish on the Jets the last couple of years. Yeah. Last year, it clearly didn't work out. This year, it's working out much better. I still feel like they're getting held together. And I think Norrissey's a huge part of this. I think they're getting held together by him, Connor Hellebuck, a little bit. I feel like they could be due for some regression into the second half, but still good enough to be a playoff team. I still think there's a lot to like about that Jets roster. And, you know, just going back to that Norris conversation, and I do think the odds are fascinating. I think I've been late to believe Erik Karlsson can actually win the award. I was so impressed, like everybody else, by the first half of the season. I mean, he's probably been the best fantasy story, the best hockey story of the season. But winning the Norris, I always thought, yeah, the Sharks are just not a good team. The numbers will probably dip. But now we're here in January, and he's still putting up insane numbers. I don't care that the Sharks are terrible. I still feel like he probably deserves to be the favorite right now based on what he's done in the first half of the season. Does he win it the rest of the way? We'll see. But I feel like I'm starting to believe Karlsson could actually win this thing, Nick.
Right there with you. Got a mailbag question to wrap. It's a good one, too. It sounds like Nikolai Ehlers could return for Winnipeg on Friday at the earliest. Ehlers versus Pacioretty. Who are you going with?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to go Ehlers because I think that he has a clear path to being a top end scorer on that team, that the Jets need him to go up and play big minutes and get big power play time. The Canes I look at as more of a scoring by committee, very deep team. They like to spread it out. I don't see anybody playing 20, 21, 22 minutes up front. I think Pacioretty's going to come in and probably play, I don't know, 14, 15 minutes, maybe, you know, upwards of 18, 19 if it's a game with a lot of power play time. So I would prefer Nick Ehlers, at least for the short term.
I'm with Pacioretty. I'm sorry. I love Mad Max. I think he's a top 40 fantasy file, whereas Ehlers is probably top 80. And they're still missing some guys on that Winnipeg Jets roster. Jake, just like Tim Wakefield and Jason Veritek at the Winter Classic, you brought it today. Thanks so much for this, buddy.
It's always great breaking it down with you, man. I hope everybody's having a happy new year out there as well.
I miss that. Happy new year, Jake. For Jake Hahn and producer Bob Bender, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, delivered by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.